When we started this podcast 4 years ago, we didn't realize what it would become. We were just two new friends that had funny conversations together, and we thought other people needed to hear how funny we were.
In the past 4 years, we have gone to the White House, the other White House, and recorded live from inside.
We got to do a residency at the Doris Duke Shangri-La Museum and record a live show in Hawaii.
That was so gorgeous. And we were featured in Oprah Magazine.
And NPR loves us.
We love you back, NPR.
Can you believe we did all this without paying ourselves? This year, Zara and I took big steps to make our podcast more sustainable.
Running a podcast takes a lot of hidden costs that you can't hear, from website maintenance, which a lot of people might guess, and also to paying our producer, Quincy Surasmith. We want to do more shows like our last episode, and it takes a lot of production and transcription. Even just for me, that last episode took about 25 hours.
We also want to be more creative, more interviews, and more on-site recordings. And as we look into the next year, the fifth year of our show, we are turning to you for support for 2019. If you like what you hear, and more importantly, if you want to support two Muslim American women running a small business, please make a contribution.
Go to our website at www.goodmuslimbadmuslim.com and fund us. Our goal is to raise $3,000 to cover our bare minimum costs for 2019. Your contribution enables us to bring you different kinds of storytelling and continuing to take our show on the road.
We had a lot of contributions after Trump's election. Many of you contributed because you found our voice was needed. If you still believe in us, keep supporting our show.
Once again, help us reach our $3,000 goal by going to goodmuslimbadmuslim.com.
Merry Muslim Christmas.
Merry Muslim Christmas to us.
Merry Muslim Christmas, Zara. Zara and I are recording out of two different locations today. Zara's in the Bay Area, and I'm in Los Angeles at our little Tokyo studio for the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Thank you, San Francisco Writers Grotto, for the use of your closet room.
Welcome to my favorite month of the year. That's a lie. July is my favorite month, but I do enjoy a good December.
Why is July your favorite month?
Well, it's my birthday month, obviously.
Your birthday month is your favorite month?
Obviously. There's so much fun in July. But, you know, December's pretty good. In California, I feel like in LA, December's kind of like the same as July. It's warm. It's 70 degrees out. Palm trees out. Blue skies. Green grass. It's nice to be in LA.
I'm just going to offer like an alternative description. It's dry. It's dry. It's dry, dry, dry. Traffic, traffic, traffic. Honk, honk, honk. Yay, December in LA.
Yeah. I honestly, though, haven't been in LA proper for a lot of this December so far. I got to go to Millennium Square Park and see the big tree in the park. And I got to see the bean. I went to Joshua Tree. I've been traveling a lot. So I'm actually kind of sad that I'm not in LA as much. Where have you been, Zara?
I have been developing the show On Behalf of All Muslims, a comedy special in San Francisco. But, girl, you're killing me because there is just one thing I want to hear about from you right now, and you're not telling me.
What's that?
Oh, I don't know. Just some person that you've sat down to dinner with. Just some person.
You're making it sound like I had a really, like, sexy date, which I didn't have because Taz is still single.
If you wound up in an elevator with Amy Poehler, I still would want to just talk about that and nothing else.
Well, yeah, I had dinner with Amy Poehler, which was awesome.
Oh, my God.
Amy Poehler has an organization that she runs called Smart Girls, and she started it 10 years ago. And so she hosted a dinner to mark the 10-year anniversary of her organization. It was so weird because she contacted me, actually her people contacted me through my website. They're like, Amy wants to invite you to dinner. I was like, who, me? What?
They said it like that. They just were like, Amy wants to invite you to dinner.
And then me being as nervous as I am, I was like, can I bring a plus one? They're like, no, this is a small, intimate dinner. Don't worry. It's just a family dinner. I was like, yeah, family dinner. And it was lovely. Amy is wonderful. She's so kind. The dinner was full of amazing, inspirational people like Cecile Richards from Planned Parenthood and Wendy Carrillo, who's a California Assembly member. I got to sit next to the comedian Retta and talk to her about her show, Good Girls. And dinner was yummy and it was very intimate. And, you know, Amy's great. What I love about this organization, Smart Girls, is it's encouraging girls and women to just be themselves. And I feel like when you're a kid and when you're growing up as a girl in this country, there's all this pressure to kind of behave in one way or another. And I love that her organization is just, you know, just be yourself and be smart. And there's nothing wrong with that.
She's so badass.
She is a badass.
Was I going to be your plus one?
Anyways,
Oh my God, this is so awkward. We were also nominated by the AV Club as one of the podcasts to listen to for 2018. Best podcast with at least two women and no men.
Wah-wah. Thank you, AV Club, for that. We're very honored. Also, there's so many podcasts out there featuring two women that we love. So, wow, us out of all of those, that's wild. But thank you.
There was also a shout out in the article to our last episode, which they mentioned is as moving a piece of audio as you're likely to hear all year. And you have even more going on, Tess. Tell us about UCLA.
I'm going to be an activist in residence at UCLA.
What does that mean?
I have no idea what that means, but I'm so honored to be able to get to do this. I don't know. You know, like you always hear about artists in residence programs where like artists get planted on a campus or wherever. So UCLA's Luskin School and the Asian American Studies Center did this program that they started 3 years ago where they want an activist to come and just be on campus and talk to their professors and their students. So that's what I'm going to get to do in the winter quarter. And I'm thrilled to do it. I'm thrilled that there's this opportunity to even have it, that there is such a thing as an activist in residence.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
So if you're at UCLA, please come by my office hours. I'm going to have office hours. I'll be speaking around and I'm going to be working on a really cool podcast project. I'll be incubating it during my fellowship there. So I don't have much details now, but I'm looking forward to having more details for y'all after the winter quarter is done.
So does that mean I can just drop in on your office hours, Taz?
If you want to fight the traffic to go to UCLA.
Yeah, probably not.
I don't know how I'm going to do it. UCLA is very much in the hills of Westwood.
Bestwood.
I will be there to be an activist in residence.
So we are in basically what I refer to as Taz month.
Yeah, this is my month of Christmas. Merry Muslim Christmas. You know, a lot of y'all have been asking me about my Merry Muslim Christmas rom-com. I don't think we've had an episode since we did our table read, which was a ton of fun. I got to tap a bunch of my fun brown folks to come and read characters in my script. I had to tap Zara to read a voice of a white folk because I don't know many white folks. I had three voices of white people that I had to find brown people to read for. What did you think, Zara? What did you think of that table read?
I didn't know I needed a Muslim Christmas rom-com.
Yeah, that was really sweet when you said that.
I like actually enjoyed it. You know, I don't like rom-coms already. Yeah. I definitely don't enjoy Christmas rom-coms. The only Christmas rom-com I like is Groundhog's Day.
Which is a February movie and not a Christmas rom-com.
That's not relevant. There's snow.
Groundhog Day.
But yeah, I was like, oh, I actually enjoy this.
Yeah, I obviously enjoyed it because I wrote it. I was talking to someone this week and they were like kind of questioning my political correctness for my love of rom-coms. And they're like, why do you love rom-coms? And I think I personally don't watch movies with guns or blood or killing, which means that since I take such a political stance on not exposing myself to violence, then it only leaves comedy as the kind of medium that I can intake. And I like joy. I like laughing and stories about love. And I know that there are not a lot of people of color when it comes to rom-coms, but there are a lot of women. Like rom-coms are mostly women protagonists. So I kind of love that. And like they don't exist. So I'm writing a rom-com with two people of color leads. So, you know, I will intake what's joy and comedy is out there while trying to subvert the system at the same time.
You know what? I find that really unfair. I think there's a lot of joy in the movie Jaws. I think there's a lot of joy in the film The Untouchables, starring the Persian man Robert De Niro. I thought he was great in that. I think there's a lot of joy in the film Bourne Identity and all of its series. I think there's a lot of joy in Fast and Furious and the series. I think there's a lot of joy in those films. I find a lot of joy in them.
There's a lot of guns and violence, too, isn't there?
Joy. I said joy. There's joy.
Well, I mean, we all find joy in different ways.
Yeah. Okay. So along those lines, I have my take on the holiday season, which if you've been listening to us for the last 4 years, you will be familiar with. But I don't know if I've ever taken it this far. Like, if I could, my Good Muslim Award would go right here, right now, to Oscar the Grouch. Not even the Grinch, because the Grinch is already within a Christmas narrative, and I don't need that. Like, his character is made for the machine. I'm a fan of Oscar the Grouch. I want to give him the Good Muslim Award for holding fort throughout this, like, joy season. I don't know. I just get really annoyed that when everyone is having a holiday, they need everybody to have a holiday. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, I have something to add to that. I had this conference call yesterday, and we were going around the conference call, and everyone was, like, doing their intro. And the facilitator said, as your icebreaker, name one inspiring gift you got as a kid for the holiday season. I got so upset by that because, you know, growing up Muslim, I didn't get gift exchanges. And this, I was like, this is so leaning towards people who got gifts as for Christmas. I was like, this is so anti-Muslim. But, you know, I wasn't going to say that. I guess I'm saying it now. But that's the part which I don't like about this holiday season. It's like this assumption that we all grew up the same way and we all practiced in the same way when that's not what it is. And I ended up like making up a lie just so that I could get through the conference call.
What do you think Muslim Christmas is about?
Muslim Christmas?
Yeah.
I think for me, in what I'm writing about Muslim Christmas, it's about taking a classic trope and being subversive with it. But generally, what I think about Christmas is that it's like this exotic thing that like white people experience. And it's kind of like how, you know, when white people go to India and then they go to the slums, that's kind of how Christmas is to me. It's like this thing that white people participate in. And I'm just kind of like slumming it in this white supremacist space.
Well, certainly the way it's represented.
Yeah, totally in the way it's represented in all the movies and in society.
And White Santa, who I blame for normalizing surveillance in this country.
And Elf on the Shelf.
Literal surveillance.
Which is a key part to my Christmas rom-com.
Oh, yeah, the Elf on the Shelf. That was a great moment. I remember in that table read. Also, thanks for letting me sit next to all the, like, hot guys. That was great.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome. That's all I achieve in life is to, like, have hot guys in a room all together so that I can just stare at them while they're reading words that I created for them to say. I highly recommend it.
For those of you out there doing table reads, if you need me to sit next to a hot guy and read characters, I'm into that. Shoot me an email.
Honestly, like, that's my incentive now to be a screenwriter is just to, like, A, craft words that I wish my exes had said. B, and have them read by, like, really hot guys. If that could be the rest of my life, I'm in. Call me a screenwriter.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me.
So, Zara, what are you doing for New Year's?
Oh, my God. I have been thinking about my New Year's resolutions since last year's New Year's resolutions.
I feel you on that one.
Really?
Yeah, because I, like, spent all this time making up resolutions and vision board last year. And I spent the whole year just feeling really guilty about not sticking to them. So I'm like, no, this is the year. I was particularly feeling guilty because my vision board is up on my wall so that I see it every time I go to the bathroom. And every time I walk by it, I'm just like, ugh, not doing it. I'm not doing the thing to get me that mansion in Calabasas.
Nice. We're like developing these New Year retreat traditions.
Yeah.
Like you go to Joshua Tree every year.
Yeah, it's turning into that.
And mine is turning into the convent that I went to last year. It's becoming a yearly thing that I do with my good friend Susan Ito, who holds this workshop there. And it's a silent retreat. And I really dig it. And I learned how to bullet journal there. And I kept it the whole year. And my last entry was on my last day of work.
You kept the bullet journal the whole time?
Yeah.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, there were times where I, like, fell off and things like that, but it's, like, it's a significant planning tool for me as a person with ADD. And, it, like, I've kept it the whole year, and then, like, literally my last day of work was my last page. And it feels super dorky to be bragging about this, but, like, if you follow bullet journalers on YouTube, then it's, like, a thing. It's, like, a really big deal.
Wait, so if you finished on the last day of work, did you start a new bullet journal for your fellowship?
By work, I just mean as I am forever employed by Zara.
Ah.
In all things related to things that Zara is working on. But my fellowship is coming to a close, and I'm kind of sad about that. It's not ending quite yet, but it's like time to wrap up, and I'm like seeing it at the finish line. There's a lot that is shifting for me in 2019. I have my like my comedy shows coming. I moved to LA. I'm still adjusting to that. I'm trying to tour again. it's a lot of big changes. You have big changes also with your activist in residence program. What else do you have going on?
I was going to say, I was like, I feel like I don't have anything going on in my life right now. I felt like 2018, I mean, usually I'm juggling so many different projects, but 2018, I was so focused on finishing my script that all my other projects that I thought I was going to work on this year didn't get worked on. So I kind of feel like it wasn't as successful as a year as usual. I have to remind myself that writing a full feature length script is a big deal. And to do it in a year is kind of a big deal.
Now, I'm feeling a little bit protective around you in this distillation here, because you're one of the busiest people I know, not to like hold productivity in, you know, some hierarchical frame, because that's not good either. But I mean, you do quite a lot. I think one of the challenges of the kind of work that you and I do is that not a lot of it you can plan for. A lot of it is in response to what's happening in the news.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I mean, you also had a huge election year.
Yeah, it was definitely a big election year. And at 18 Million Rising, we basically doubled our staff. We hired 2 new staff.
Wow.
And we did all this work around elections. I think for me, the big reason I applied for this activist in residence fellowship was that I kind of felt like I just needed a change. And I wanted to start 2019 just shaking things up a little bit. So even though I know that I have like too many plates that I'm juggling, in another way, I kind of just wanted to do something different. Maybe that's my resolution for 2019, is just to figure out ways to make things different. You know, it's a big birthday year for me because I'm turning 25 again.
Oh.
Like for the 15th time.
Oh.
And I think that for every like big birthday, you kind of just start reflecting on life very differently.
You're turning 100?
Entering a new decade, which is just like, wow, that's a big deal. Let me ask you what you want to do. So Zara, what's on your list of resolutions?
My New Year's resolution this year is to do less fretting. I fret a lot about what other people think of me. It's embarrassing. How I'm being received, and then I waste time either venting or processing to my partner, wondering if I think someone likes me or dislikes me. It's such a waste of time. Because most of the time, people don't feel one way about a person anyways. It doesn't even matter. Sometimes a person likes you, sometimes they don't. But it's such a trigger for me. And then I spend all this time wondering and talking out loud about it with Duncan, my husband, because I'm like, oh, I just need to get it out of me. I just need to like vent it into the air. And I think that if I vent, you know, that's what everybody thinks, is that if you vent, then you'll release it and you'll feel better. But actually, I listened to a TED Talk about how that's not true, which I've actually said on this show before, that TED Talk about venting. I've said it before. But this year, I really don't want to spend time thinking about all that shit. I don't want to spend time processing. No more meta-processing. I'm just like wrapping it all and chucking it. No more fretting. I don't care what other people think of me. I mean, I do. Way too much. But I'm not going to think about it anymore.
That's interesting. I feel like I don't have a lot of people to vent to. Maybe I should start venting.
Well, that's why I got a dog.
That's why you got a dog? To vent to, or like to have someone to share joy with?
Both. To vent to and to say, I have my husband is in medical school. There is no joy in the house without my dog. That's who I mean when I talk about my partner is Wookie.
Oh, of course. Of course. Obviously. Yeah. You know, something that I realized this year was, A, I really miss my radical love column where I was writing monthly. But I also miss that, like, the column gave me a place to storytell. I'm thinking less venting, more storytelling. I feel like being able to have spaces where you have the opportunity to talk through ideas and thoughts and narratives that you're experiencing, like, then I would go through and just, like, turn into a column. But without the column, I feel like I didn't have a reason to really, like, talk through stories. And I haven't been crafting as much in my head or verbally. So maybe less venting, but like, I think for the new year, I want to like go back to the art of like verbally telling stories to each other.
Yes.
Which I mean, we definitely do that a lot on our podcast, but I miss like going to cocktail parties and just telling funny cocktail jokes and stories. But I don't drink, so maybe not cocktail parties.
I was going to say, what you're talking about, I think, is like so hugely important, is having the space to reflect in a way that's healing.
Yeah. And not even just healing, just like sharing, like just having someone to witness your life.
Mm, I like being a witness to your life in a non-stalkery way.
I like being a witness to your life in a non-stalkery way as well.
Yay. I do have one stalkery-ish, though, question for you.
Yes.
Okay. What do you think about Priyanka and Nick Jonas?
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe they got married. Also, how come Nick Jonas didn't clean up his beard before he got married? Like, it was so patchy. And, like, Priyanka was so pretty at her wedding and all of her, like, gazillion receptions and with her beautiful outfits. And then Nick Jonas just looked like some, like, random frat boy who's, like, cavorting around India. I was not here for it.
Oh, my God. As a woman married to a cis straight white dude, their schlubby uniform game is, like, so extra.
What do you mean?
I went through my husband's wardrobe and threw out all of his old undershirts because he was still wearing them as shirts.
Yeah.
He'll wear, like, orange basketball shorts with long black socks and just, like, go out like that. And I'm like, no, no, no.
And the thing about Priyanka and Nick is that they have all this access to designers and people dressing them. I just don't understand why Nick didn't try harder.
Presentation is such a privileged thing.
Such a privileged thing. And he's 10 years younger than her. It's like, you got to step up your game, homie. Come on. But, you know, congratulations to the couple. I don't think it's a farce. Everyone's saying that it's a publicity stunt, but I think it's too absurd to be a farce. I think it's just...
Oh, it's absolutely a publicity stunt.
You think? I think they're too weird. It's too weird of a match for it to be a publicity stunt.
I think it's a white supremacy publicity stunt because, like, Hindu nationalism is on the rise.
That's so funny.
I think Priyanka's making her, like, man move, connecting herself to whiteness. I don't know. Is that too much? Is that too much conspiracy?
I don't think so. I'm not a fan of Priyanka, so I'll buy it. I think, though, there was an article that came out in The Cut that got pulled really quickly where they were talking about how Priyanka was taking advantage of Nick Jonas's fame. And I thought that article was unfair to Priyanka because obviously Priyanka is the more famous one and the one with more, you know, accolades attached to her name. So I thought that was really unfair and kind of racist and xenophobic. But besides that, you know, I'm not on Team Priyanka, but I'll go to bat for her when someone's like making fun of brown girls.
And on that note, let's take a quick break.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a podcast about the immigrant minority experience, but like in a fun way. What does that mean? Your hosts, Iranian-American Anna and Syrian-American Shireen, walk you through being a modern Middle Easterner in today's climate.
They discuss growing up with immigrant parents and also tell you stories from history that will help you make sense of all the news coming out of the Middle East.
One of the things I love about this podcast are some of the things that they talk about. It's kind of like our podcast, two women talking about very real issues. They talk about being raised as an outsider. They talk about stereotypes about Middle Easterners that may or may not be true. And they talk about representation in television and films.
I like how they're telling stories from history that help make sense of the news that's coming out right now.
And the episode comes out every Monday, and they make your Mondays better.
Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Notebook up. And we're back, and it's time for Creeping Sharia.
Creeping Sharia.
Zara, what happened at the dog park yesterday?
My puppy got attacked.
What?
It was a small attack.
Wait, I think attack is just an attack. How is it small?
I'm still reeling from the whole thing and just like really grateful that it wasn't worse. My dog was playing with two dogs. One of them was a big dog and one of them was a little dog.
Okay.
And the little guy and him were like tumbling. And at a regular dog park, there's usually like a small dog side and a big dog side. And the mid-sized dogs make do, you know, depending on how alpha they're feeling. And this one was just like all the dogs, all mixed. And this big dog and small dog were buddies. My little guy is playing with this little guy. And then the big dog.
And your dog's really small.
Yeah. And then the big dog decides that it's going to jump in on behalf of the little dog.
And then what happened?
The big dog sunk its teeth into Wookiee's ear.
Like tore off a piece or like bleeding?
No. He went for his scruff. you know, like this like maternal sort of check. But he actually like pierced his ear. And aww. It was really scary because, you know, you hear like your dog yelp, you know, in a way that they're in pain. And it's like, you know, my whole being hurts. Fortunately, the other dog owner was really attentive, really present. She immediately got in there, got her dog off, pulled her aside, and then like, you know, came and checked in with me. And she did like everything right, like that you're supposed to do in those situations, because stuff like that happens, you know, like, and she checked to see how my dog was doing. She gave me all her information. And I feel like I kept it really cool. I feel like I did a really good job of like keeping my cool, even though there was like blood on my puppy and I was freaking out inside. And, you know, it's awkward because like you don't want to say, I'm sure everything is fine, blah, blah, blah. Because like, what if something's not? And there's like legalese, you know, that you like traps that you could be getting yourself into. So I just like said nothing, said thank you so much, and then went to the vet. And fortunately, it was just, you know, surface wound, no stitches necessary, little ointment, and we're good. And then I needed to leave her with a little Muslimy gratitude.
And what did you say?
Well, I said, Merry Muslim Christmas, Merry Muslim Holidays. Thank you so much.
But you literally said Merry Muslim Holiday?
Yes, because I wanted to get it in because, like, you know, I could have been a jerk and I wasn't. And she could have been a jerk and she wasn't. And we both handled it really well. And there's this like really Christian thing I grew up with as a kid, living across the street from somebody who was like super evangelical. Every time there was like a good exchange, she would say that, like, you know, it's what Jesus would do. She always used to say that when we were growing up. And she would always attribute any like thing that went well in our relationship to Jesus and Christianity.
That's so funny.
And so I really wanted to get mine in. And I was like, Merry Muslim Holiday.
Was it passive aggressive or was it like intentionally like joy to the world?
No, it was intentionally joy to the world. I just wanted it to be Muslim joy.
Muslim joy. Nice. Was it received well?
I mean, in emojis, yeah.
Oh, you texted it to her?
Yeah. I mean, I was at the vet. Everything came out fine. And, you know, she needed like a payment plan with the vet, and the vet accommodated that. They said it happens all the time. And everybody just like did such a great Muslim good job.
What emojis did she actually respond with? Was it like a peach emoji? Was it an eggplant emoji?
No. It was the mullah emoji, the one with the mullah with the big white beard and the hat.
The mullah emoji.
Yeah, he has like a red hat and a big white beard.
You should respond with the Mecca emoji.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing if it was like mullah, 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 Mecca, 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 Merry Muslim joy to the world. Ho, 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 ho. Yalla.
Yalla. My creeping Sharia is of our favorite immigrant chocolate. I'm only saying this because I only remember eating Toblerone every time someone went through the airport.
What?
And they would bring it back. Like, I don't actually know where you can get Toblerone in the store. I just know it's at the airport. And members of Europe's far right are now boycotting Toblerone because Toblerone is halal. Y'all, Toblerone is halal, which I don't actually like. Isn't all chocolate halal, Zara? Like, I feel like all chocolate is halal.
I mean, that gets into like so many other questions around fair trade and what is halal actually mean.
True.
Let's put that out there. Also, yeah, I didn't know that chocolate needed to be halal. What's in there?
Yeah, I know. That's what I think is so funny, because like basically food that doesn't have alcohol or pig in it is halal. So like all chocolate is halal, right? Except for the ones covered in like rum and like the ones covered in bacon, because bacon's everywhere.
I was going to say.
Bacon lobby.
Yeah. I mean, I do enjoy my like rummy, bacony chocolate.
It's so silly that they're boycotting this, but I'm going to take it. I'll take this one.
Enjoy your immigrant chocolate, Tess.
I don't know where to buy it. I guess it was probably at Whole Foods. No, it's not at Whole Foods. Is it Whole Foods? World Market? World Market. That seems very immigrant. World Market.
What are you talking about? Toblerone is at like every Vons and Safeway and Ralph's, and like it's everywhere. This is a major creeping Sharia accomplishment you've stumbled upon here.
I know.
It's up there with like Toblerone is like, when it comes to like immigrant chocolate, you're totally right. It's up there with like See's candy.
Yes. Actually, we didn't get See's Candy growing up. We got Cadbury growing up.
Ooh, Cadbury.
It was Cadbury. And whenever we would go to like auntie and uncle's houses, it was a box of the Whitman chocolates. And you would take those and then you'd stick your finger under each of them to figure out which one was not the like nugget one, because everyone only wanted the caramel one. And then also it was like the Danish butter cookie tins. I feel like those are all like, to me, what I remember as like an immigrant kid in the 80s. Like, that's what I remember.
I'm so hangry right now that I'm ready to fatwa.
Yeah, let's fatwa. So yesterday on December 19th, we finally saw what the live action Aladdin is going to look like. Entertainment Weekly had a cover photo featuring Jasmine and Aladdin and the genie. And it was a little problematic and kind of messy.
Why?
Why, you say? Well, okay, so Jasmine's outfit is, she's wearing a corset all of a sudden. Like, apparently, like, corsets are a thing of the desert. Aladdin, who is actually, like, this really hot guy with nice brown skin and tight curly hair, they straightened his hair. And his skin looks a lot lighter than in some of the brown photos I've seen of him. And then Will Smith plays the genie and has a lot of this weird getup going on, too. And can we just talk about how hot Jafar is? Like, the guy that got cast as Jafar is really attractive. So also, like, why wouldn't Jasmine want to stick around with Jafar? Because they obviously cast the hotter guy as Jafar. It's a mess. It is a complete mess. And we expected this, but geez.
Damn.
What did you think of the cover? You saw it.
I mean, we kind of knew this, right? We kind of knew a lot of this was going to happen going in, right? Like, it's been a challenge, like, reading all the articles leading up, you know, to the representations that they went through. I've been waiting. The thing that really sat with me, that is the quote that I am fatwaing. I'm fatwaing this quote. Is from director Guy Ritchie. He says about Will Smith's role as the genie, "The great thing about the role of the genie is that it's essentially a hyperbole for who that individual actor is. So it's a wonderful platform and tapestry for an actor to fill his boots on." What?
That's bullshit.
I mean, that's the longest way of saying that someone can play to their stereotype.
Yeah. And it's also the excuse that entertainment industry always gives to casting white people as brown people. Like, that's the same thing we heard about everything, you know? Like, it's so problematic.
Like, way to undercut the actor work that Will Smith did for the role, let alone, right? By saying that, like, he's just playing an exaggerated version of himself.
Mm-hmm.
What? It's just, like, all kinds of inappropriate, all kinds of wrong. I'm not even going to talk about the preposition at the end because I don't do grammar humor. I think it's obnoxious, but whatever, Guy Ritchie.
Whatever, Guy Ritchie. Also, like, whatever, Aladdin. Like, I think this movie is going to be a big, hot mess. I'm only going to be watching it because I want to support brown people. But I'm just really upset with the casting. Well, I'm like, half upset with the casting because I knew what was going to happen with the casting ahead of time.
Right.
But even with the casting that they didn't have to make it so over-the-top orientalist. And it feels, from all the images coming in, that this is, like, super over-the-top.
It's just so funny, like, that you pointed out, now I can't stop seeing it, the medieval corset that she's wearing.
Yeah. What kind of a desert person wears a corset? Have you been in the desert? It's so hot. There's no way you need ribbing on your skin like that.
Sounds like a new slur. You corset-wearing desert person.
Desert person. Zara, do you have an awkward ask?
Oh, it's time for the awkward ask a Muslim, huh?
Yeah. And it's Christmas, so there's always awkward asks at Christmas time.
Oh, God. I got the perfect awkward ask for me. You know what I mean? Like, only I would be, like, super annoyed by this.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I have a new workout instructor, and she, like, very well-meaningly brought up the topic of, like, the holidays. And she was talking about, like, how she has all these different conversations around, like, what's appropriate to say. Is it appropriate to say happy holidays? Is it appropriate to say Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas? Happy Hanukkah if you celebrate Hanukkah? She was telling me that some other white guy had an opinion about this. I don't think I need to summarize it in any other way. And her thinking has been changed now that he was saying that happy holidays is this, like, secularization that, like, you know, doesn't allow people to sort of, like, rejoice their difference and say their different religious you know, backgrounds. And I was so annoyed and also at the same time kind of appreciative and annoyed, but appreciative. And I was like, oh, this is my awkward ask a Muslim.
Wait, what were you appreciative about?
I mean, I appreciated this like noticing of secular as not really secular, you know, that it defaults to the dominant religion. I appreciated that.
I think if his argument stands true, that means that basically for Eid and 4th of July and Veterans Day, we should be saying happy holidays, right? Is that what he's saying?
No, he's saying we don't do that and we shouldn't do that. We should say, like, basically quit trying to pass is another way of looking at this.
Oh.
I think.
Interesting.
You know, say your difference. Announce your difference.
Yeah.
You know, like, one, why are you shoulding? You know what I mean? Like, as a white man, like, you don't need to be telling my white woman feminists these thoughts to then relay to me in my exercise class. And then also separately, not everyone is having a holiday.
Yeah, not everyone's having a holiday.
It was a little awkward. I keep ping-ponging back and forth on like the what should, you know. I think there's also something to be said for like always wanting these things to be like nice and tidy and white people always wanting to know what to say and making it about that, you know, rather than like institutional structures.
This is why we should just say have a Merry Muslim Christmas, you know, and just really confuse people. And everyone's gonna be like, wait a second.
I 100% agree.
And then you say Jesus Christ was a prophet. And then that'll also really confuse people. You know, just do the twofer.
All right. What was your awkward ask a Muslim?
My awkward ask a Muslim was around Robolights, which I love, and we've talked about on the show before. It is this amazing art installation out in Palm Springs where this Muslim convert named Kenny Irwin, he's a white convert, and he created this Christmas Muslim alien skulls, weird rabbits, weird art thing in his parents' backyard. He's been doing it for about 10 years now. And every Christmas time, he opens up the installation for tourists to come through and walk through. So I've been a few times. I've actually made my rom-com take place in Robolights when I was writing it. Zara has also been. And, you know, I wanted to take my dad this year because I was like, I want my dad to see this. So I was really nervous. I was really nervous because he's a very religious man. I wasn't sure if he was going to like walk through and just say that everything is haram about it, which I was kind of expecting to happen. And then as we were walking up to the house, this older woman just invited herself into our group and was like, can I join you all? And then, I mean, you can't really say no, you can't join us. So it's like me, my two sisters, and my dad. And this, and she had a little bit of an accent. It turns out she was Egyptian. And we thought she was just going to like walk with us to the front door of Robolights. Like she just needed to figure out how to get there. But this woman just like hangs out with us the whole time. And it was so weird because we're like, why is this older woman like trying to be friendly? And then I was like, oh my gosh, is my dad getting a meet cute at Robolights? And I'm not getting a meet cute at Robolights. What's going on here? And my little sister was just like, how dare you let her join us? I was like, you can't really like say stop walking with us when you're like walking around lights. I was like trying to be nice, but she was so anti everything Robolights was. She was like, it's not beautiful, but it's interesting. I was like, well, I find it beautiful. She was like putting such a damper on the experience. I mean, you know, Zara, like I love this kind of weird, kitschy kind of shit. And she was just like not having it. I was like, well, why are you here? Why did you come here? She's like, I went to the website and I looked up Christmas lights and this is what came up. And I was like, well, you probably should have done your research before coming to like an alien horror Christmas light show in the first place. So that was really upsetting. So I kind of like tried to avoid talking to her. And then my little sister was like, why don't you just explain to her what this place is? And then I was like, well, okay, Kenny Irwin, he's this Muslim convert. That's why there's a lot of like Muslim images around. She's like, well, Muslims don't believe in icons and I'm from Egypt and I know this. And I was like, I just like rolled my eyes and didn't really say anything. And I think when she said that, I thought she was implying that she was Muslim. And then she like halfway through walking around, she walks away. And then I'm walking with my dad and there's this particular Muslim-y part of the park where there's a woman in hijab. There's a man in a turban. They're holding guns. They're in front of a structure that kind of has the outline of a mosque, like the minaret. My dad's looking at it and he's like, you see, this is good publicity for Muslims. And I was like, okay. I was like, all right, Dad, because, you know, I would say something like that, but I was really surprised my dad said something like that looking around, which means like, okay, like in my head, I was like, okay, this is good. This is good. My dad likes it. And he's like, you know, that woman that was walking with us, she's Egyptian Christian. And she was saying all this negative stuff about Muslims because she grew up in Egypt. And I think that by her walking around here, she probably thinks of Muslims differently. And that's why my dad said that comment, was because for him, that experience was like this Christian Egyptian woman who was exposed to the negative parts of Islam, like finally came to Robelites and like saw the other side. But to me, I kept thinking back to how she was trying to explain to me what Muslims believe and don't believe. And I was like, how dare this woman try to explain Islam to me when, you know, she just like she grew up in Egypt. And like, yeah, it was very frustrating. Like my response to her when she had initially said that was like, you know, art is conceptual and it's for interpretation and he's making a statement and we have to be open to art. Like that's the whole purpose of art, is to be controversial. Yeah, I was super triggered by that whole experience because like I just wanted to go and have fun. I didn't want to have it be a thing. I hate when the problematic thing that you're experiencing and the microaggressions that you're experiencing is coming from another brown person. But it got better after that. After she left, it got a lot better.
My triggers are all going off in a completely different direction. All I'm hearing is FBI, 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 FBI. She's an informant.
Right?
That's so weird.
Yeah, it was like, why are you following us? Why don't you like go away?
Because she's FBI.
Well, she did a bad job at being an FBI informant.
Or CIA or NSA or Homeland or whatever acronym is following Muslims lately.
Well, we did our job and we pushed her away. So that's good.
That's a super creepy, awkward-esque Muslim.
Right? It was super creepy and I was not okay with it.
But I love your dad's sweet response.
I know. And then he like really appreciated Robelites at the end of the day. He was like, do you know what part he actually loved, Zara?
Which part?
Do you remember at the end of Robelites, there's like all those pigeons?
Yeah.
There's like a big cage of pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, when he was in Bangladesh, he used to keep pigeons on the roof of his apartment, like when he was a little kid. And he saw the pigeon house and he was just like, oh my gosh, I love you. Like he was telling the birds that he loved them. And I was like, oh my gosh, people are watching us.
Oh my God, that's so sweet.
He loved the birds.
Was the woman hanging around while he was saying this?
No. She was gone by then. She could only take us for like 15 minutes and then she was like out.
That's so weird.
She got all she needed to be an informant.
Mm.
All right. We're almost to the end of our show. But before we go, we have two Good Muslim Awards to give out. I'll go first. My Good Muslim Award is to Bahia Amawi, who is a Palestinian consultant in Texas to the school district. She worked in speech pathology and she's been working there for years and years. And then recently, when she went in to renew her contract, she was asked to sign an anti-BDS statement, an anti-boycotting Israel statement, which is so ridiculous because it's a school district and she's working in speech pathology. There's no reason why Israel should come into this. But because of the way that the worker rights laws exist in Texas, because she didn't sign it, she lost her job over it. And so there's this huge lawsuit happening and there's a wonderful article over at The Intercept. So my Good Muslim Award is to her for standing up to the man and doing this.
Nice. I didn't even know about her.
I mean, like hearing about this case made me think about how grateful I am to live in California and how I never want to live in a state where it's okay for an employer to ask their employee to sign an anti-boycotting Israel statement.
I'm glad I know about her. I'm really weirded out knowing about that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what to do with that new information.
Yeah.
Like, what else is there going to be? You know what I mean? In this new administration that we're in, that we still have a year left of.
Yeah. And this isn't even like a federal law. This is a state mandate. We can't even put this one on Trump. We have to place this in the hands of the Texan people. Why does Texas allow this? I know we have a lot of Texas listeners. Y'all should be fighting this. Who are you going to give your Good Muslim Award to, Zara?
My Good Muslim Award is going to a duo, Dr. Hossein Rashid and Nagin Farsad, for the series Yay. On Secret History of Muslims in the United States. It's up.
I love
it's
them.
On the New York Times. They're so great in this. Like, they should have a whole series. Wait a minute. They do. There's an entire series of this animated short. I can't wait for you guys to see it. And I'm just so excited about this and all the other opportunities that this opens us up to.
So when I watched it, I didn't realize it was a series. I thought it was a one-off thing. So I'm really excited that it's a series and there's going to be more. But when I first heard about the secret history of Muslims, I kind of feel like it's just our creeping Sharia segment. It sounds like it's just a bunch of Muslim creeping.
That may also be because I got a shitload of my creeping Sharias from Dr. Hossein Rashid.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I approve of this award. They are great people. Zara, where can people watch this?
On the New York Times. You can type in Secret History of Muslims in Google, do it the old-fashioned way, and it'll pop up. Type in Negin Farsad, N-E-G-I-N Farsad, Secret History of Muslims, too. It'll pop up. Or type in Hossein, Secret History of Muslims, Obama, and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that might pop up if you type in Hossein.
Also, shout out to Negin Farsad, who I think by now will have had her baby. Good job on spreading the Muslimness into the DNA pool.
A Christmas baby.
It is a Christmas baby. It's a Merry Muslim Christmas baby.
Merry Muslim Christmas baby. And on that note, Zara, can you believe it is the end of year 4 of our podcast?
Should we do a year 5?
I think we should. Do you think we need some help doing a year 5?
I would love some help doing a year 5.
We would love some help. If you love what you're hearing and you've been supporting us for 4 years, please help us get through year 5. Go to goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. There is a place to make contributions. We don't know what the fuck we're doing. And we made it this far. And we couldn't have done it without your help. Like, all the support we got from the community, all the support from the podcasting community, the Muslim community, all kinds of communities. I can't believe we're going to year 5. Most podcasts have a lifespan of 6 months. The fact that we've lasted this long really says a lot about not just our relationship with each other, Zara, but, like, you know, of what kind of a need there is for a podcast like ours.
And also our unsung hero, Quincy Surasmith, who, you know, does so much of this work and would like to get paid.
Yeah, we want money. Honestly, we've been doing this for free, basically, for 4 years. So please help us so that we can pay the people that make this podcast a thing. So thanks, everyone. Merry Muslim Christmas.
And a happy new year.
See y'all in 2019. Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nurbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's T-A-Z-Z-Y-S-T-A-R, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's Z-A-H-R-A Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Surasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studio, located at Visual Communications. Visual Communications develops and supports the voices of Asian American and Pacific Islander media artists who empower communities and challenge perspectives. Some of their annual programs include the Academy Award qualifying Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival, the Armed with a Camera Fellowship, and C3, the Conference for Creative Content. Learn more at vconline.org. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Mullah, 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 mecca, 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 merry Muslim joy to the world. Yalla.